thank you. So, if I understand well, you are here listening and learning from biologists, being theoretical physicists. Well, I'm an experimental physicist, so I should be on this side. So don't expect from me to teach you what things like what Mark Tachney did yesterday. Some of you might know, in fact, more biology than I do. I will just tell you from two experiments the kind of thing as an experimental physicist we are trying to do. Maybe I could teach you something of the difference between experimental physics and experimental biology, but that's another question. So Mark Tachney was gave a good introduction for me when he said that, you know, if you have protein A and protein B in small enough concentration so that they don't interact, if you have a substrate like DNA, then protein A and protein B position themselves on the substrate, and then it becomes a three-body problem. Well, I will tell you of a case which is a case of another protein, VEC-A, which polymerize on DNA. So it's not a two-three-body problem, it's a many-body problem. And what I will show you is that if you study the polymerization of VEC-K on single strand of DNA, in fact, this polymerization allows you to very precisely separate different sequences. And in fact, minute difference between sequences appear in different onset for the polymerization. And then I will show you two things. First, at equilibrium, how VEC-K is able through space polarization, through space polymerization by covering space to segregate sequences. And after, I will show you that VEC-K in fact needs ATP, and when ATP hydrolyzes, you enhance this segregation enormously. And this, of course, might be of interest in recombination. After that, if I have time, I will tell you of a simple experiment we do on evolution, where we try to evolve in a LAC-O, LAC-R system. LAC-R is a repressor protein which is fixed. We start from a random sequence and we look how the dynamics of evolution lead to and how specific is the LAC-O which is observed. So it's more a dynamics of evolution that we do in the lab. So I don't know how far we'll be able to go on that. So the work on VEC-K is done by two postdocs, both coming from the Weizmann Institute, from your place, Roy Barzil and Sweet Lucy. And so the first thing is VEC-K polymerization on DNA. I will show you first that, you know, VEC-K is not a two-body problem, VEC-K DNA. VEC-K needs also ATP. But in the first part, by taking a non-hydrolyzable form of ATP, ATP gamma S, we are then in equilibrium, and I will show you that VEC-K can probe structure of and sequences. And in the second part, as we move by replacing ATP gamma S by ATP, which can hydrolyze, I will show you that we get amplified discrimination, and that it's a proofreading mechanism out of equilibrium. So, something about VEC-K. VEC-K, as you, some of you know, maybe all of you, comes from recombination. So it's an essential protein. It's an E. coli protein, but there is analog of VEC-K in eukaryotes. It's a small protein, 38 kilodalton, and it plays an essential role in recombination, but also another type of role in DNA repair. It's a very highly regulated DNA binding protein. It's highly regulated, it's very well conserved, its promoter is highly stable. So what you have to know is that when Reke binds, essentially it binds to three bases per monomer. One Reke covers three bases. It forms a right-handed helical filament, which you can see here. The pitch of the helix is 6 Reke, so 6 Reke for the helix, and each Reke covers three bases per Reke. And it is a very important DNA-dependent ATPase. Reke with ATP and DNA, there is a high affinity of Reke to DNA. When ATP hydrolyzes, the affinity of Reke to DNA is much reduced. Well, wait, I have not said yet. So now, Reke itself can polymerize alone at high Reke concentration. But then it polymerizes on single-stranded and on double-stranded DNA. And you see here a view from the side. It's not very specific as far as the bases are concerned. This is what biologists have found up to now, but there's some weak specificity. So it can polymerize very fast on single-stranded DNA and much more slowly on double-strand DNA. And when Reke polymerizes, what it does is to stretch DNA. So anything which leads to rigidity of the single-stranded will be a problem for the polymerization. So there are two. So now I will tell you about single-stranded DNA only. So there are two rigid structures which can happen on single-strand DNA. One is an hairpin due to the fact that you have a palindrome. So this gives you a small secondary structure which is rigid, and Reke will have difficulty polymerizing, so it will have to stretch this object, which will cost, of course, some free energy. The other rigidity will come from, as I will show you, stacking interaction of single-stranded DNA. What some of you don't know, or maybe you know, that this is a very early paper on DNA. This was in 1953, Watson Crick. What you do know about DNA is AT and GC hybridization. By the way, at that time, there was one hydrogen bond missing here. But what is very important as far as the bases are concerned is A and G, which are called purine, are different from T and C. A and G, as you can see, have a double benzene-like ring structure, while T and C have a single. So those are purine, T and C are pyrimidine. Purine tend to stack two purine above each other, even in single-stranded DNA, stack and have an interaction energy. CT essentially don't have, which means that any single-stranded which is rich in C and T in pyrimidine is very flexible, with a very short persistent length of the order of a base length. But as soon as you have purine, A, G, poly-A, poly-G, you start to have a rigid structure with the stacking. So that rigid structure will again impair polymerization of Reke. And then you understand that when you write a sequence, you have always possibilities to have those type of secondary structure. And this is what will create a problem in polymerization. It's a few KT. It's not very well known. For single-strand DNA, the number fluctuates. There's not been any very serious study of stacking interaction. We did a measurement using beacons and looking at the loop, putting poly A and poly G, and then we came with a number which is a few KT.
So
A stacks and G stacks, and poly A G stack, which you will see. Okay, so all that, the covering of AK on DNA is, this is a textbook. Yes, what?
Are you in strains?
Yes.
Persistent like changes very much.
Yes, yes, yes. So,
so which range you work?
Well, you will see, because depending on the pH, there might be some slight differences. As you know, this is a kind of picture of a combination, which is a textbook picture and does not explain much. But essentially, you see single-stranded DNA is covered with RK. You have a double-stranded, and at the end, this strand exchanged with an homologous one, which you have here. Okay, so this is what we are studying. The way we are studying it is the following. We put on our single-stranded, at one end, a fluorophore. Then if you have a fluorophore, and if you excite it with polarized light, the fluorescence emission is polarized. But the molecule has a Brownian motion in the fluid, and rotate, tumble, and move, and in general, from that, you end up by having essentially almost complete depolarization of your fluorescence intensity. But if RK polymerizes on DNA, it makes a rigid structure, and this rigid structure, of course, has less tumbling, and it is through all this change in the essentially the Brownian motion, which lets you recover fluorescence and polarization of fluorescence. And you can recover about 30% of fluorescence polarization. So, so the way the experiment is done is you send a polarized light, you have two photo, two PMT, two photomultiplication tubes, which measure polarization in this direction at square angle, and from source to detector you can deduce what is the anisotropy of polarization of your fluorescence emission. Now you titrate your AK concentration with a micro dispenser pump, so you can have an automatic recording of the anisotropy, which will give you how AK polymerize on your DNA. And typically, this is what you get. Here we take a length of DNA, 40 base long, which will be the typical length we will take, about 40 base. Here it's poly T, which is the most flexible single-stranded DNA. We are 20 degrees C. Here is our buffer we are using. We have used different type of buffer with different acidity. In fact, the effect will always be there. So this is the kind of curve you get. You have a very small concentration of single-stranded DNA, which is in the nanomolar range, so that when RK covered your DNA, the total, the RK concentration is not altered. And what you see is that there is a critical concentration where RK starts to cover DNA. You can see from this curve that it's, of course, highly cooperative. And you can do a model which I will not describe to you, which is supposed to be Ising-like. And this is the linear, the curve here you see is a fit to the data. So it's a measurement, a thermodynamic measurement of the mean distribution of length, and you can see that here you reach saturation, which lead to 30% anisotropy of your fluorescence polarization. There, all your DNAs are covered. So this is a typical experiment, and what we will look at this transition, how this transition is affected by what you write. And you will see that the effects are quite dramatic. So, again, just to recall to you what I said here, we will be sensitive to secondary structure like that, and would be sensitive to stacking energy. For example, you see here you have a GAAG. Well, I doubt that this will curve like that. It will be more rigid structure than what you see here. This is a textbook. So, first effect, stacking and interaction. If you have T's or C's, pyrimidine, everything is flexible, the DNA is very flexible. The onset of like a condensation is the same. There is some slight difference, but you see that essentially it polymerizes well. If you have a poly-A, you can see that you change by essentially 2 decades the onset of polymerization. This poly-A is rigid, which hinders the polymerization. And you can see that even the cooperativity of the curve is changed quite a lot.
So once it polymerizes, it becomes straight.
When it's polymerized, it is saturation here,
well,
which means
interesting that the rigid one, which is more straight to begin with,
the rigid one,
harder time
because Reiki will have to unstack the base.
Oh, I see.
It will have to unstack all the bases.
It likes it not to be stacked.
That's right.
Quite
the same way. That's right. So you will see after that, when we calculate some free energy for secondary structure for stacking, we can put all the onset in an exponential curve, an activation energy curve. So to show you that it's now, you don't see here poly G because poly G is hard to synthesize. It has nothing to do with, just if you ask for poly G, it's difficult to get. Now, if you make mixture of purine or pyrimidine, you have the same effect. Here is again about 13 times TTC, which is 2 pyrimidine. You see again a nice curve of polymerization transition, while as soon as you put mixture of GA and A, you see that it's displaced.
So,
the cooperativity again goes down because Reiki has difficulty polymerizing. It has to break all the stacking between the base. So it's
because of the question. It looks like
it. Yes, it is going down, of course. So that's the first effect. It's an effect that we see here, but we have observed it in many other experiments where you have to pay attention that in single-strand DNA is not as flexible as people are saying. It depends on what you put, purine, pyrimidine. Now, what about secondary structure, which means hairpin like that? Again, we find that Reiki is affected. So here it's 13 times repeats. We put a codon repeats because one Reiki covers 3 bases. And you can see again, this is poly T, you can see sharp. And you can see that, for example, CGG, where there is a lot of CG hybridization, the polymerization of Reiki is pushed very far, in fact, to concentration where Reiki polymerizes alone, doesn't need a substrate to polymerize. And one can explain all those transitions by the amplitude of the secondary structure of free energy. So you can put all that, because you can calculate or estimate stacking. You can calculate following some of the known free energy calculation, secondary structure. And if you do that, You put here the onset of polymerization in logarithmic unit, and the change in free energy when you unstack and you open a secondary structure, and you see they all fit in an activation curve. So this is our conclusion. Ray K stretches and get rid of all secondary structure, whether they are stacking or whether they are hairpin-like. So this is an equilibrium. In all I've told you now, we were using Ray K with ATP gamma S. So you get only polymerization, and it's a stable process. Now, as you know, like in many cytoskeleton proteins which polymerize, if you start to play the game of hydrolysis, whether GTP to GDP for tubulin, or ATP to ADP for actin, you have depolymerization regime too. And the same thing will happen for Ray-K with ATP. But before I go to that, let me show you a few things. Yes? Okay, ATP gamma S cannot go to ADP, it's stable. It's a form of ATP which cannot hydrolyze.
So which means
it's stable.
Don't take energy from it.
Exactly. So just now, with ATP, you can have a transition hydrolysis of ATP to ADP. So before I go to that, let me show you. Yes.
Gamma S can provide energy by binding.
It can provide by binding.
It cannot recycle because
exactly.
It cannot hydrolyze.
Exactly.
It's not that it cannot do anything, it very often does it all.
Yes. I think this is a much more precise way of saying, yes, exactly. So now, before I go to that, let me show you that the sensitivity is such that one can detect differences. So for example, first example. We have here our 39T. We replace 3Ts by 3A, a codon. So you see you have some weak 8T hairpin, which in calculation, but it's very weak. Nevertheless, if you have the T39, as soon as you put a defect like this one, you see a shift in the polymerization onset. You can even be sensitive to single mismatch in case where a single mutation affect a structure. So for example, what Roy chose is the beta normal hemoglobin, which has this code, and he replaced here an A by a T. Now you realize here that you have G, A, G, G, A, G. This has some stacking in here. You replace the A by the T, you cut two of those stacking. And you can see that the shift always in the same direction. And you can, if you are here, you see detect a change reasonably. No, here we have not done a systematic. It would have been nice to show that in a region where there is no stacking, it would have no effect. But it's not so trivial because then there can be some other secondary structure. For instance, you put it a G and there is a GC.
Is there some significance to the effect of the prospect that the line that is tangent to the curve at the inflection point has different slopes?
That's right. You're right. It will have to do something with some cooperativity effect in it. So that is a more detailed study one should do, which we have not done. Yes?
The slope,
the bending of the slope, yes. Yes? Yes. Or without. But the polymerization, the polymerization on double-stranded is pushed, is displaced. It's slow and it does not polymerize very well. It has, in fact, what has been shown by many groups, us included, is that even in double-stranded, the nucleus of polymerization will be on a bubble, and that's where it will start, and then that's how it will stretch double-strand DNA. So, well, it's just a I think it goes together with that. It does the same thing on double-strand, so that it's pushed very far in concentration. That's all.
Since the stacking in single-stranded between purines impedes the process, then the stacking in double-stranded would impede it even more.
Exactly. It does.
Is that sort of proportional, yes, or unexpectedly low friction?
No, it goes essentially in the right direction.
Downward.
Yes.
All
right. Okay, now I move to another case where you can hydrolyze ATP. If you can hydrolyze ATP, then you have an interesting dynamic, because what will happen . You have your DNA. Suppose you start by having it covered with Reke. The covering goes from 5 prime to 3 prime always. What Cox and the biologists have shown, and I will give you a reference, is that depolymerization, when ATP goes to ADP, starts also from the 5 prime. So it will depolymerize one by one from here, and then this leaves site for the nucleation of a new Reke ATP. So it will nucleate, and then it will depolymerize, and then nucleate, and can nucleate from any different place. And you will see from that we have a process which is a kind of kinetic proofreading process, which you will see operating. Yes, all one way. Polymerization 5 prime to 3 prime, depolymerization 5 prime to 3 prime. And in order to study that, we put the fluorophore here for this ATP study.
Does it sit there, or does it go?
And immediately it will polymerize from that on and fast.
Wait, so it will land on that side?
Yes. I will show you. First, what's the difference in the effect? This is a typical curve you have seen before, and we have seen how sharp it is. This is again, with ATP gamma S, it's 39T. As soon as you replace ATP gamma S by ATP, you displace, of course, because you have a lot of instability of depolymerization and repolymerization, and of course, you change the slope also. And what I will show you is that this process is a very efficient process of recognition. So, to summarize, before I do that, one of the experts of Reke, Cox, he published a complete study in 1999 in Journal of Molecular Biology, showing exactly that depolymerization of Reke always starts from the 5 prime end and moves like that. So you have a front of depolymerization. I'm not talking about the cell, I'm talking in vitro on a small piece of DNA. Once you go into a cell, you have to change, you know, maybe a lot of things. What? You want this curve back?
What you showed us in now.
Yes. No, ATP gamma S,
everything.
ATP gamma S, everything.
So the high coperativity and high
is ATP gamma S. It was ATP gamma S. As soon as you put ATP, because of instability, it always depolymerizes after polymerizing, and you take an average, you find that you are in a completely unstable regime, and that changed the onset and the cooperativity. Experimentally, that's what we see.
It's unstable because ATP degrades ADP?
Yes, because not only degrades, but it degrades fast when Reke is on DNA. There is a high concentration of Reke, and there is eventually some front of hydrolysis, which is another question. So essentially,
does it actually affect?
You will see. You will see. So what happens is that if you are covered, when ATP hydrolyzes, you depolymerize, which is a slow process. This leaves a lot of free DNA space where you can nucleate. So, for example, you nucleate here and repolymerize fast up to this point. So, if you look as a function of time, what you expect to see is a jump when you polymerize up to this point. Then you slowly depolymerize, so you leave some free space, so there could be a nucleus any place, and you see the process will go on like that. And that process, in fact, what it does is do the same thing that gamma S did, but repeats in time. So it keeps repeating the process. And of course, if you want to segregate very well, what you would like is the time between nucleation to be comparable to the time of depolymerization, so that you have very large amplitude of sweep. That I'm doing above my time. Fine. So, this is a... Wait.
Just that each cycle is stochastically variable, but you don't know how fast...
No, you don't know. It's random. It can renucleate any place. So this is the theory where he compares something you all know, Hopfield and Nino, kinetic proofreading mechanism, irreversibility when you have multi-stage, which are needed for proofreading, to what we have here, and you will see that there is a difference. So what you get, suppose you are completely covered, you depolymerize. So you go to this state, you have lost one recce. Then you can renucleate and you have one site. If you depolymerize more, you have two sites for renucleation and start. At the end, you have n sites for renucleation, and this is the renucleation. So you see that not only you have a cascade of n steps, but you have another n coming by all the possibilities here of falling to 0,1, 0,1,2, 0,1,2,3. So this is what will lead ultimately to an effect which is not linear with the length, but will square with the length. Because the length will come in the number of steps and in this number of possibilities for renucleation. So this is another series. And it's a process of the same order of Hopfield and Nino, but enhanced because of this effect here. Now you know that all those kinetic proofreading are very old ideas. In fact, because I like old science, the idea came from Lord Rayleigh in 1896, when he looked at the separation of gas by diffusion and similar processes, which is again is a process which is irreversible. And he showed that then you can have a cascade. And essentially, it is the same idea as kinetic proofreading. And has been used, as you know, to separate uranium-235 and all that. So, what you get, in fact, is the following model if you believe three model. As a function of time, for example, here you had almost completely depolymerize, and you polymerize up to the top, and then you depolymerize, then you jump to any place where a nucleus will start, and the process will keep going on like that. And of course, you take an average. So depending where you are, the average will be here or here or saturated. If you are near onset, you have a very few nucleation, and you have a depolymerization, so you see that your level will be very low. When you are at the critical region where your fluctuations have a very large amplitude, you are, I will show you where you are on the curve. And when you are at saturation, your nucleation rate is so fast that essentially you are always covered. So this is the essence of the model. And of course, in order to recognize sequence differences, what you want is to have very large dynamics. So you want the time of depolymerization to be comparable to nucleation time. Nucleation time kinetic goes as 1 over a number of sites, number of AK, and the K for nucleation, and the time for depolymerization goes as n over K0, which is depolymerization. You will see the equation. In that sense, you will have a large amplitude fluctuation. And it's always a large amplitude fluctuation which will help you in order to separate better. Because if you have small amplitude, you are not sensitive to all what you have written. So in a way, if we could measure that, the dynamics, it would be interesting to do higher moment study to extract the large amplitude fluctuation from the small amplitude one. So the result of that is she wrote an equation for the probability for AK filament of length n minus n at time t, the dp dt, which depends, this is rate of depolymerization, dp of dn, and this is rate of polymerization. And of course, you want to compare the two rates, which in dimension are k0 over n, k nucleation rn. And when those two are equal, this is where you have the largest fluctuation. He also estimates what is the distribution of lengths, which is an exponential distribution going linearly with the reaction, linearly with Rk concentration, but you have this n square because of the mechanism I showed you, that you have n step, but at each step you have n possibilities. Okay, so result. Here you will see the enhanced effect. We could here TAC certain time, and then TAC doubled. If we took 80 gamma s and we look at the length and twice the length, you see the curves are the same. When you don't have the instability in this renucleation process, you have no effect of length dependence. If you put ATP, you see that you have a big effect. And this is a, this curve fitting, the curve fitting to phi theory. Yes?
Your theory assumes that the unbounded region is a single strand, but with the TAC, it can form a secondary structure.
Yeah, a weak one. It's TC. So it's weak secondary structure, which of course it does. It's weak one. So it displays a little the onset. Okay, why did we choose TAC? Because you will see that TAC and TCA are not distinguishable with ATP gamma S. Okay, then I told you that the distribution should be exponential. So you take, here is a covering, you take 1 minus the covering and you look at this curve, and what you find is that if you have twice the length here than here, you can see that the effect, which is remarkable, is that first the onset is pushed to lower onset, and then the slope, exponential slope, are different. So from that on, one can deduce number for the equation that she wrote. Finally, here, we show again that the enhanced sensitivity, we took TAC and TCA certain time. They both have the same type of secondary structure. With ATP gamma S, they cannot be separated. As soon as you put ATP, you see a separation, which scales well with a theoretical approach. And, well, I could go on and on, but if we make differences between the curves and plot differences, we can see, for example, here is two lengths difference, and the difference between, here we plot differences, the difference between this TACN and this TACN, and that one T has been replaced by a G here, one mutation, and you can see how important are the shifts. So I just want to conclude on this study. You see, the process, and it's an interesting point, is that in biology, when the mechanism works and works very effectively, it's used in many places with somehow different function. As you know, for microtubule, it's a way to compute in a way space by having from a centrosome your microtubule searching. And this instability is very important for the search, for example, of chromosome. Well, here the same kind, not the same identical instability, is used to separate slight difference in sequences. Now, is it useful? That's a more difficult question. But you know that there are hotspots of recombination. And what we have done and continue to do is to show that our hotspot of recombination correspond to places where AK can polymerize very easily. That confirmed. How it is used exactly in the process, that's another question. So I will not enter, because we are doing now experiment of recombination to try to pinpoint where this very extremely sensitive proofreading mechanism is used, if it is used. But it is there, in vitro. So one can do some nice calculation even with the fuzzy logic of biology if you isolate. Yes?
Rock came by itself, is the binding to single strand strong enough to separate?
It has to, to polymerize. It's a structure of the polymer, the organized structure of the polymer, which leads to the stretching.
So then you would speculate that something randomly opened it up and whatever that they can land on the
yes.
polymer is actually.
Yes. You could do many other things, which could be more origin of life kind of things. Reiki binds to codon, right? Mm-hmm. Codon, 3 days. So you could have floating RK with 3 days. Now RK polymerized. So it could be to ligate. It could be a process which has been used at some point. Because RK polymerizing, you get immediately a template on which ligation could come. I mean, you can think of many things. But of course, between that and doing it, it's another problem. Fine. Okay. Now, I finish for that. I want to tell you some things simple about an evolution experiment. Cannot tell. I don't know what exactly is the effect. I suspect that there is some interaction, but I'm not look seriously. Maybe he has. No, at the beginning, when we do those experiments I described to you, the fluorophore is at the 3' end, or at the end of the polymerization. And that is exactly for that reason, to be sensitive. Well, maybe 5 minutes. 5 minute breaks, and then I need half an hour or 20 minutes to tell you about evolution. Okay, here I will be much more vague, much more speculative. We are trying to do many different type of experiment on directed evolution. And directed evolution, molecular and directed evolution. Okay, so I will give you some list, but I will describe to you only one, the simplest one. This work is essentially done at NEC Institute in Princeton, where I have a laboratory, and the main actor is Shumo Liu, who is a molecular biologist who came from Lederberg lab at Rockefeller. And in the experiment I will show, the work is done also by Benoît Dubertret, a French postdoc from Strasbourg. Okay, so we tried different experiment. The one I will describe to you is the evolution of a DNA binding site, meaning that we take a protein, which is a LAC repressor protein, and we start from random sequence of DNA, and we try to see how it converges to the known accepted solution, which is called LAC-O, and the protein is called LAC-R. But we do other experiments, which I don't want to talk today, because they give a lot of surprise. This is experiment in vitro. All the other experiments are experiments in E. coli. And for example, we ask ourselves the question, we have promoters, and the promoters are reasonably simple in E. coli. What happens if you take one promoter out of a gene? You do an evolution experiment, and you watch when does this gene becomes expressed, and then you sequence to see what has happened. And another time, another year, I will tell you, because there is a lot of possibilities. It looks like biology is extremely flexible, even in the way it does its syntax or regulation. And of course, other experiments we do or try to do is evolution of protein, where you use a display, and certainly you have heard about phage display, but we use more ribosome display, so this is more hard real biology. What I will describe to you can be done by an experimental physicist. So, we have a directed evolution. We start from protein LAC-R. LAC-R, LAC repressor, certainly you have all seen a picture. It's typically tetramer. So you see here two equivalent sites. And here you have a palindromic representation. So you have a tetramer here. And DNA binds to this. You see a piece of DNA, makes a loop. So if you look in 3D, you have DNA coming, making a loop, coming back. So that's how the LAC repressor works. What we do, we take half of it, and then we make a construct with, we biotinated. So we take this piece with biotin, and we cover a test tube completely. So we have complete coverage of LAC-R. And I must say that is very essential. Because if you want to make directed evolution, you will want to see which DNA sequence bind to your LAC-R, and you will wash everything else. So you are looking for specific binding of the DNA sequence, which will become what's called LAC-O. But as always in biology, non-specific binding are a terrible problem. So when it comes to protein, we are able to make a very full coverage. So DNA is only LAC-R. In many other cases, you can be pay attention that non-specific binding can screw an experiment severely. So what do we do? This dimer, which you have seen, binds to this sequence twice 10 base. And yeah, you can see it's a palindrome, because those two pieces of the head of the protein are of mirror symmetry. So yeah, this is the solution which comes out at the end, the in vitro solution. In vivo, in the cell, there is some symmetry breaking between the two pieces, because you have a tetramer, so it's a little more complicated. But in vitro, it's like that. So, what do you do in this type of experiment? You start from a random pool of DNA which has a length, here it should be 20 base long. You synthesize a random pool, or you don't do it, you order it. But you order it in a concentration such, which is 10 to the minus 16 mole, so that the probability that the solution is present at the initial is very small, less than 2 to the minus 3. because otherwise you don't do evolution, you do enrichment, right? So this is very, very important. So in our case, we choose 30 base long instead of 20, so that the solution with many different phases is possible. If you have 30 base instead of 20 base, you can have a solution binding here, 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 here. So this is a kind of control. It allows us to check that in fact many solution comes so that you don't have it at the origin. In effect, the binding, I repeat, is 20 base, but it's a binding of a dimer. We use 30 base and play with phase shift, and in fact we'll take 70 base because as we have to do PCR, we need primers. So we need to have two primers, 20 base long on each side. Okay. The protein, like R, biotinated, covers the surface of the tube. And what we will do, we will follow the trajectory during evolution cycle at each cycle. So at each cycle, we amplify and do mutation. So you amplify and do mutation using PCR. Mutation rate, we don't push. You know, with PCR, you can push mutation rate very hard if you want. We don't. It's 10 to the minus 4 per base per cycle, which is a typical mutation rate of PCR. We make 25 rounds of amplification for each cycle. So we have mutation amplification. And each cycle, you do amplification mutation, you put it here, you wash, you take what binds, you do a number of things like you filter the size by gel electrophoresis, and you sequence. And that's the long part. In each cycle, we sequence from 6 to 17 DNA. So the change here is not that we didn't want to sequence all of them 20 times, is that in order to sequence, you have to clone, and in order to clone, all your cloning don't work well. So statistically, sometimes we have 6, sometimes we have 17 clone coming out. You have to understand that this part, cloning, can take easily a week if you do something wrong. So that's where the bottleneck of such an experiment is never here, it's never in the PCR, it's never in the mutation amplification. It is in the sequencing. Sequencing is what takes a long time. So because of that, yes?
How do
we selection? Once we have done amplification mutation, we put it in our test tube, we incubate it for 1 hour, and we wash, and we keep the DNA which binds. So we are looking for the DNA which binds. Two lac R. This is a protein here, and only the protein. So we are selecting the DNA which binds to the protein. Okay? So because of this very, very time consuming process, and because NEC is a company, what we are doing now is to try to reach a single molecule PCR in order to avoid cloning. That would be another talk. It starts to work. So what do we want to do? Well, we want to see how specific it is, and we find that there is quite high specificity for the DNA which binds to lac R, which is called lac O, as you will see. And can we get information on the protein DNA by, if we, at each cycle, we sequence, and we know what the solution is, we can see which base come first in the selection, how stable they are, which base comes second, and so on. And what we found from that is that it gave us an idea which was confirmed by the structural biologists that the first base which were coming was the one which interacts the most strongly with the protein. So you can see how the process of interaction slowly builds up. This, but in order to do that in a serious fashion, which is not what we have done, you need to do a lot of more sequencing, a lot of more things.
You're pulling only a few out of the
Yes. We pull. You take off the DNA.
Initially, you have a very broad distribution.
Yes. So we randomly choose. That's the point. We should to have a good statistic. We should sequence a lot. You're right. You're right. I mean, what can I tell you? I'm just telling you that if you want to sequence a lot, it's huge.
I don't understand. You say, okay, let's say that the fifth base is the fixed first, right? But how can you tell when you don't know the thing?
We will see. We'll see how we do it. Okay, so as we have the solution, which is this one. We just compare to the solution at each cycle. That's a consensus solution. Yes. Yes, because you know, like O, like R is a very well studied case.
How different are they, please?
What?
How different are the consensuses?
Well, there are differences, and in fact, you will see in our result within three base mutations. There are differences. Yes. I mean, more or less in what we found, there's three base possible mutation. We cannot separate at the end. Now the consensus, I forgot what it is exactly. So for example, to give you, so what we do, of course, we do what you know how to do much better, much better than us. We do alignment, which means we have our solution, we have our 30 base long, and we align at for each phase displaced. So for example, after cycle one, what you find is that the way we present the data, the minimum number of mismatch is here when you have a phase of one, which means you displace your 20 base, your solution by one, from starting from the left to the 30 base, right? You... Yes. Yes. Here, for example, is one of the 30 base, you have your solution here, you look how many mismatch here, how many mismatch here, and you do that for each phase, okay? So here your alignment, in fact it goes more than 10 because we have primers, so we go a little more. And for example, after one cycle we'd say that the minimum number of mismatch was 11 mismatch for a phase of one. After five cycle we find that we get a solution with three mutations with a phase of 12. This is just to give you an example. So this is our naive experimentalist look at the problem. So here, what?
You start from
you start random.
Absolutely random.
Random, but with a low concentration, so that the probability to have the exact solution is very low. Random. It's easy to start from random.
After cycle one, the ones with match you find may not even be significant.
Wait. Here you have a number of cycle here, number of cycle here, and the top give you the number of mismatch, and the bottom is a phase. So what you get, after cycle one, you can see that we have a lot of mismatch, which is about what the random should give us, we don't select. The phase is random also. The second cycle, we again find that there is no selection, and no selection in phase. Third cycle, we still have a lot of mismatch, but you see there is one solution, this one, which is close to the right part of LACO. So there is something coming. Phase is also completely random. Then that's cycle four. You can see that phase start to group in three different places. And in cycle four, you start to have Brocky solution which come with two or three mismatch. You have two with two mismatch, two with three mismatch. And you have this thing which is three mismatch away, not from the in vitro solution, but from the wild type solution. Starting at cycle 5, you can see that we are converging. And we are converging, and we can get here up to 4 mismatch. At cycle 5, you can see that we have still 3 phase, but this phase here overlap a primer. So of course in evolution it will disappear because we don't do mutation on the primer. And you end up at, after a while, cycle 8 with only 1 phase. And you can see that the solution we get have 1 or 2 or 3 mismatch. So there is some fluctuation in the DNA base you can study. So this is the type of experiment that we are doing.
How important was the mutation here?
10^-4 per base.
If you didn't do mutation, would you get the same answer?
No, we did that. But that is a problem because you have to amplify. How can you amplify with that mutation?
I see.
So in this experiment, as you use PCR, you cannot amplify without mutation. You can reduce enormously the mutation rate if you would do it in E. coli. So we would have to do it in E. coli and then compare, and you know, it's long enough like that.
So the mutation rate you told you was basic to the procedure.
Yeah,
it wasn't
well,
something you did deliberately.
No, we can change it. We can increase the mutation rate.
Yes.
We cannot decrease it.
Okay.
This is the base one.
Good.
And you will see we did a simulation which confirmed, I mean the simulation is easy to do and confirm all those results. Yes.
Did you try this experiment with partial coverage of your test tube?
No.
Because
no.
Thinking in a real cell, I mean this is like the fitness is completely tied to the binding and
The real problem, if you don't have only specific binding, but you have also non-specific binding, that you will start to get other branch coming out, which are not. Yes, of course that happens. But you know, we want first to show that an experiment like that can work. We don't want to go to the next step of complication.
This experiment with a lot of work, so just
this is a lot of
work. Yes.
For example, I didn't tell you about pollution. How much effort you have to do to avoid pollution. When you work with DNA, your lab is covered with DNA. DNA is long-lived, so you have DNA all over the place. So you have to go to another place, clean, and you have to isolate yourself. I mean,
What do you want to avoid the pollution from? You start from random DNA.
No. You have.
But what is the
in your room? You have a bunch of.
In
black
your room,
holes,
you have a bunch of.
What?
Yes.
Oh,
what do you mean? What do you think you have on your skin?
You have
RNA and DNA, you have everywhere. Suppose you have a solution which is injected at the beginning, you don't do evolution, you do enrichment. You enrich a solution which is already there.
He wants to make sure that there's no lack of
problem. Yes. Both. You have, of course, and you play in a lab where we have bacteria all the time, everywhere. I mean,
so it's the bacterial contamination.
The contamination in a DNA lab is always an extremely severe problem.
This is not the question. The question is what?
Well, which I cannot tell you. Yes.
Was the selection according to how close it matched the known sequence?
Well, yes. That's not the selection. That's the way we. This is the way we present, that's the way we present the result.
But you'd like to have it come together on the function, irrespective.
You're right, but then I don't tell you because I don't have it here, what are the solutions? Because we have the solution, we know what they are. This is just a presentation here, where we compare with a known solution.
I think conceivably, you could have had another sequence that came out that was even better, but it didn't. The standard sequence turned out to be.
You can see that. Well, no, you can see that it didn't, because we are very close.
Right.
We are very close to the solution. The result is that we are very close to this solution.
To the known
point
solution.
Being made.
Yes.
It was already said, but I want to just underline it.
Yes.
It could come up with a completely different sequence.
We would have seen it.
That's what we are saying. So the result is significant in the uniqueness aspect of
it. Yes, we would have seen it. You see here, we would have seen solution, which compared to this has a lot of mismatch and is very stable. But it's not there. It's not there.
Off. If you take another initial solution, then although it may have your
I cannot answer that question. If you want, you come to the lab, you do the experiment for 6 months, you test many initial conditions, and you get the result. You are invited any day. Yes?
This is a heretic question, but it seems to me that what you are doing, you are taking an experiment which would be very easy to simulate on a digital computer, and you could
have
an analog device which is extremely painful to do the simulation.
Absolutely. But.
I mean, there are some questions that you answer are specific to lack
of course.
To lack R, but since they are specific to lack R, they are not interesting.
No, but we you don't understand. No.
We can write simple model.
No. No, the simple model will not tell you the sequence.
The energy of a black
to be an A. No, the simple model will not tell you which sequence come out. The simple model, as I'll show you, there is a simulation, tells you that in fact after so many cycles you should converge, but you don't know to which sequence. And this is the important point. How can a simulation give you that?
What the binding site was.
Well, of course.
You go and take that protein, you have two holding out the binding site.
Okay, to answer.
You don't do this kind of experiment before. As I said, when you go to the other way, you can use it to reconstruct more detailed information on binding energy.
Okay, now to answer the question, yes, we did a simulation. And you see, this is a distance from lac O, and we do find, as a function of cycle, that after 5 cycles, you start to have some broad solution coming, we don't know which one. It check with essentially everything, what's the mutation rate we have, how many cycles. So we did the simulation to be sure that there was some convergence. But the sequence we get, the simulation cannot give you that. Yes, but that's the important point. So, fine. This was the exercise I wanted to tell you about. There are many things we are trying. I told you at the beginning that we are trying to take off promoter and to see when the gene is expressed again by putting a plasmid without the promoter in E. coli. The results are complex. I don't want to tell you today because I will be surrounded by millions of questions. I'll tell you a simpler one we are doing. This is more to give you the feeling of what we are trying to do. You take a plasmid, which has everything you want, with a T3 promoter. You put it in E. coli with a T7 RNA polymerase. And you check when it starts to be expressed and what kind of mutation from the T3 promoter to the T7 promoter, how it came about. So there are many experiments you can think of which can be done. Some are reasonably simple. The one I've just told you would be trivial to do if we could amplify single DNA, if we didn't have to go to cloning. Well, I want to show you, but we have early results showing that you can do PCR at a single molecule level. We have 10,000 little wells, and we spread so that there is at most 0 or 1 DNA, and PCR can work. So we hope that if we can reach that, then I can answer your question, because then everything will be fast. In biology, one of the games is to cut all the new long time processes and to try to make that automatic or simple. If you can achieve that, the number of questions you could answer by evolution experiment will be large. And of course, from as you all know, from an industrial point of view, what you want is more evolved protein, which is not too difficult if you solve the problem of selection. Okay, that's it. Finished.